The Fearless Podcast, in a time of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. Louis DeJager, welcome to the Fearless Podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing amazing. Super happy to be here.
Yeah, well, thanks for reaching out. You know, I know you have a new book that's coming out, and what's very interesting is the name of your book is SOS, Save Our Soils. And a really good friend of mine, Billy Bond from Permapasture Farms, he is out in North Carolina, and they have a Save Our Soil Foundation out there. And what they're doing is they're remediating contamination using composting methods. And it's like really high level stuff. But what's really neat is like it's an ancient science of composting, but it is literally like the way forward with like negating these forever chemicals and all these things that we're becoming aware of. So I thought there was a lot of overlap there, and I'm like, man, this is neat. And then when I started looking into what you're doing and all the food forest stuff, I was like, wow, well, we kind of have a lot of common. So yeah, welcome to the Fearless Podcast. Maybe if we want to start out with like, maybe you could give a little background and what led to the writing of SOS.
Yeah, well, first and for all, I really love Texas. I've been there a couple of times. Really, really, really love it. And it's cool that I've almost passed your place. So a pity I didn't know you back then. But also a nice coincidence about your friends and having almost the same name. And it's really a cry out. SOS means save our souls, but saving our soils is actually the same like saving our souls. And it all started actually when I was doing a sabbatical year after I went to school. I was 18 years old, young, naive, wanting to see the world. And I actually traveled around a year through the United States. And I saw a lot of land that's been degraded by heavy tillage, heavy pesticide use, heavy use of chemical fertilizers. And it was really shocking me the effect it had on the environment, but also the effect it had on people. A lot of farmers that I met were having cancer, or a lot of women I met has lost their farming husbands because of cancer. Also, I met a lot of farmers whose children have born to be autistic or having neurological defects. And now more and more studies are coming out that shows that it's actually because of pesticide usage. And more it's clear that if you poison the soil, you're also poisoning yourself. And for that, I was, as an 18-year-old, really frustrated. And, you know, when you're young, you think black and white and you're a bit extreme in your visions. And I really saw that, well, how is it freaking possible that we're putting poison on our food? So I kind of started a quest to really find answers. First, I thought, well, it's the fault of the farmers. But then when I started to talk with farmers, then I really heard that it's not the fault of the farmers. It's the fault of a bigger system where they're farming in. And mostly, a lot of the time, they don't have a choice to do it. And the more I dug, the more complicated the story became until I found the answer. And I'm super happy that I found the answer to a lot of questions I had. It took me about 10 years to figure it out and talk with professors, farmers, from big farmers to small farmers. Also, I talk with Bayer and Monsanto to hear their side of the story. And super happy to found the answer. And now I want to share it with the world in this book.
Yeah, it's great timing because other people like Joel Salatin and Will Harris and these other, regenerative farmers have been kind of sounding the alarm. And then they've been demonstrating not just the viability of regenerative agriculture, but also the profitability and kind of the, in permaculture, the problem is the solution. And I was attracted to permaculture 12, 13, 14 years ago, just because, you know, we became very aware of what was in our food and what it was doing to the population and vaccines and autism and all these different things. And we wanted to take control of that. And that's why we decided to relocate, move. We wanted to get somewhere where dirt was affordable, and then we could live like a slower, intentional agrarian lifestyle so that we could implement this kind of stuff. So this way, you know, we're not trying to, like you were saying, when you find out about this issue, it's a massive global issue, and that can be very overwhelming. But if you can take personal responsibility, right, and you have the ability to accumulate dirt and then say, okay, well, I'm not going to grow a lawn. You know, a lawn doesn't profit anybody. A pasture, you could at least raise a cow or a pig or whatever on pasture. But
you can't eat your lawn.
Yeah, you can't eat your lawn. And so we're going to grow an edible landscape, you know, and we had no training, no background. We had no family background in farming. And we just decided to do that 10 years
ago. Just go for it. Screw it. Yeah. Let's do it. Love it.
Yeah. And that's what's great. It's like, okay, why worry about it if you can implement something and do something? And so then you're part of the solution versus part of the problem.
Definitely. And that's, I think, an invitation we have to give to everybody, is everybody can be part of the solution, and everybody actually wants to be part of the solution. A lot of people just don't know how to be part of the solution. And that's, in my opinion, one of the biggest jobs that we have to do, you by making the Fearless podcast, me by writing this book. We have to invite people and show them, look, it's as simple as A, B, C, and you can do it. Even like every time you eat, you can make a choice. Every time you buy a t-shirt, you can make a choice. Is it grown with cotton that's full of pesticides, or is it grown with organic cotton, for example? There are so many simple things you can do, and that's just empowering. Because a lot of people are feared. They're in fear. They're paralyzed. They watch the news every day. It's sometimes not healthy to watch the news every day. Sometimes it's good to stop watching the news for a couple of days. Because if you only watch the news, you become terrified, because you only see bad things happening, because bad things sell more views and have more clicks, and people are paid by the click nowadays. So it's better to really choose what input you want in your life, and which books to read, or which YouTube channels to follow. And there people are back into their own power, because I think that's what we all want. That's the foundation of America. What I love about America, that people being in their own power, striving for their own freedom, just like you did. You found a piece of land to do your own thing on. But even if you live in a city and you only have a small balcony, or even only have a windowsill, there are things that you can do. And that's nice. Once people understand and make this mental click and say, hey, gosh, I am unlimited. I can do unlimited kind of stuff. And I have unlimited powers to do whatever I can. Once you understand that, that's the reality, not the reality of being bombarded by negativity, but you know that whatever comes my way, I can do something about it. I can be part of the solution. Then everything is solved. And we're very close to that point. We just have to make this mental click.
So what is the state of our global soil health? Kind of like, where are we soil-wise?
Well, in 25 years, we're doomed. That's the state of our soil right now. And that should scare the crap out of everybody. Because 25 years, you'll be alive still. I'll be alive still. And if we wouldn't be alive, our children or grandchildren will still be alive. 25 years, it's super close by. And that's a prediction that some people say, 25 years, don't be so dramatic. But I have friends who live in Spain or live in the US even. And there it's not 25 years, there is 5 years, or it's even today that their soil is already completely gone to dead. I won't use the S word, but it's really just dead. You can't do anything with it. You can't support your life. You can't get food out of it. And I love technology. I'm a tech enthusiast. But whatever we plan to do, we still need food. No matter how cool your gadgets might be, you can't eat your iPhone or your Tesla or your whatever. We still need food, and good food is grown on real soil and on soil that's alive, that's full of life, not some toxic piece of dirt where we try to grow food out of it and then the food grows ill. Because if you put a seed in toxic soil, then you need medication for that food, and if you put medication, pesticides on it, then you have toxicity all around in your body, and that's really causing a lot of troubles for a lot of people.
Yeah, and I think the beauty of the topic is it's a relatable topic, and I think everybody, whether they're willing to admit it or not, will agree that a monotype of agriculture and glyphosate and all these new and improved weed killers and all of this, manipulation of these forever chemicals, like everybody knows that this is a problem and an issue. And now we're seeing Joel Salatin calls the homesteading tsunami. We see people that are less enchanted with all the gadgets and the gizmos, and they're more like, hey, I want to have a real life, in IRL. And look, there's positive effects if you get your feet in the dirt, with grounding and picking up the microbiome that is still there, and then that'll improve your gut health and all of these fascinating things that you can see how we were created to live in harmony with creation, and then that by interacting with creation, we can create abundance, and that's very empowering, and that is like, and so then you do it, like you plant your first seed. Or I fell in love with trees, and because like, wow, if I plant this once, okay, it might take it a couple years to fruit, but this will fruit for 25 years,
Even longer.
Yeah, and that's something that I can, wow, I can do this once, and we can get paid over and over again. I coined it as my food 401k.
Voila.
I became disenchanted with the modern structure of, investing in the markets and the stocks and the bonds and then being kind of like, you just kind of put that there and you're not involved with it. You can't control it. You can't increase the ROI. It's managed by somebody else. But if you plant a tree, you can dig it. You can dung it and fertilize it, and you can do all these things. You can prune it, you can shape it to make it more abundant. Like, you're part of that process, you're involved, and that is incredibly empowering.
Yeah, and it's also, yesterday I was speaking for a group of around 200 investors, and I said, well, do you know what the best investment is you can do today? And they were all thinking about these crazy schemes or whatever. And I said, if you plant a tree today, it will cost you less than $50, less than an hour of your time. And it will give you nuts for the rest of your life, the rest of your children's life, the rest of your grandchildren's life. And if you're lucky, for the rest of your grandchildren's life. Name me one investment that you can do that's this cheap and will provide you with so much for your entire life, and it's hard to find one because it's natural, it's self-regenerating. The tree has its leaves falling down on the earth. It feeds the soil. The soil life will be happy. Then you have the fungi and the bacteria going back to the roots. You have this beautiful system because you won't plant one tree, you'll plant multiple trees, and that's what the true Garden of Eden is. You can be an atheist, but you can be religious. But if you look at it, that is creation in action, just like you say. And it's actually a super religious thing because we've been given this planet, this beautiful planet, so full of riches, and we've nuked it to death with all our pesticides. It's not really a religious thing to do, right? We have to recreate this Garden of Eden. So it's like, one, it's investment-wise, so it's economical-wise one of the best decisions and investments you can make. But even on a spiritual level, on a religious level, it is, you're freaking recreating the Garden of Eden, you know? What better thing to do? And I always also think about security and defense. Yeah, nowadays, a lot of voices are going up, yeah, we need to invest more in defense. And there was somebody who's telling me, oh, Louis, I have this brother and he's constantly nagging me then and saying that I have to invest in defense and I don't want this. I don't believe in war. I believe in peace and blah, blah, blah. And I said, no, just tell your brother that he's right. Just tell your brother that we need to invest even more in defense. But what is defense? Imagine if you're the mayor of a small town. And you have to make sure that the people living in your town or city can survive even in a worst case scenario. It's like being a parent for your children. What have you learned? Well, the first thing that you learn in life is, okay, you need to have this bank account with some money on it in case your car breaks down or in case you need to buy a new washing machine or you need to fix your roof or whatever. It's like common sense. Everybody does this. But if you're a mayor of a town or a politician or whatever your role is, you have to make sure that your people that voted for you will have enough food in the worst case scenario. And right now, we've depleted our fields. They're addicted to inputs. If we stop giving them their drugs, their dose of pesticides and chemicals, they won't produce any food. So we are basically screwed. We won't be able to survive. So one of the most important things to do is, and on a bigger scale, is to have these emergency food forests. These are food forests that act as natural forests. You can have all the climate benefits, the nature benefits, and it will provide food like acorns, like walnuts, hazelnuts, all kind of nuts, but also fruits. And if we decide to do nothing with it, then these nuts will fall on the ground. Nobody cares. Squirrels will be very happy. But in case if a war breaks out and we don't have any inputs, then we'll have enough food to survive. If I were to be a mayor, that would be the first thing I did, because we've been living in peace for a while, and the best way to keep on having this peace is to also have a peace of mind. And right now, you can't have a peace of mind if you know that in the next 25 years, 90% of our soils will be degraded. So we have to do something about it, and it's literally as simple as starting to plant some trees. And of course, it goes more complex if you try to solve all the societal problems, but you can start super simple. One tree at a time.
Start one problem at a time, one tree at a time. And, you know, we've experienced a fragile cascading infrastructure from 2020, and we saw like how ephemeral our supply chain was. And if that doesn't illustrate why it makes sense of why we should be concerned with food and food shortages and all these different things. And also historically, we know that the power struggle and the power brokers know that if they control the food, they control the world. And so
exactly,
there's this geopolitical jockeying going on, and you can, oh, well, what, you know, how do you control that? Like, how can you control negotiations between China and America? Well, if you just secure your own food supply and you focus on that and worry about that, then at least you won't have to worry about that. That's one less thing to worry about. And then if you do it right and create abundance and you create a parallel economy and a parallel community, now you can barter with your neighbors. You don't have to be the expert at everything. You don't have to be the lone survivor. You know, you can love your neighbor and you can work together, and they can be good at one or two things, and you can be You could be the fruit and nut guy, you know, or you could be the cow guy or the duck guy or the chicken guy or the chick, you know, and if you, this is redundant, this is local, this is the way our society and culture used to be, you know, 150 years ago. And even if you go to Italy today with these family farms, and they would, you know, the family would stay local, and the family would also like pool and accumulate their money. That's another thing we practice called private family banking, where we combine our capital and our savings as a family, so that that's a way that the problem with these banking problems we have and these global banks, and these are the banks that are funding the wars, right? These are the same companies that when we invest in our 401k, right, BlackRock, Blackstone, State Street, Vanguard, they take our investment dollars and to get us the 12% rate of return so that we can retire, they literally buy up the world and make it monolithic. So they're enslaving us with our own dollars. And if we work in these microcosms, whether it's capitalism and banking, whether it's a food forest, like these simple solutions that could be something as one tree or maybe a group of trees, and then trees and you're making them more redundant and with companion plants, comfrey and berries, and you're doing like a terrace kind of infrastructure, creating microclimates. Like this is like real, you know, I started getting into propagation and grafting, and fantastic. It's so fascinating the it different is. Things you can do. And it's exciting, and it's peaceful. It's like, you know, so many people are on medication, you know, whether it's GLP-1s or whether it's Adderall. But if you slow down, right, put your feet in the dirt, and, you know, start practicing these principles and these permaculture principles and doing these different things, it's a very peaceful way. It gets you back focused on, you know, the real world instead of like geopolitics and CNN and all these other scary things that would like give you a panic attack.
Exactly.
It's literally the opposite of that. And, you know, the way we raise our children is, I think we even have a t-shirt and it says, observe the masses and do the opposite. And, you know, that's what we have to do.
Brilliant. And it's so true, eh? So I run a landscape architecture firm, and we design food forests. We design edible landscapes, going from small gardens to entire private islands, to big agriculture estates, to hotels, to eco resorts. So we have clients that are just regular Janes and Joes to billionaires, and everything in between. We have people on the far right, on the far left, and everything in between. We have super religious people, super atheistic people. So the nice thing of our job is that we can really observe and see all these different kinds of peoples with different kind of worldviews and different kinds of wealth. And it's so nice to see the differences. That's interesting. But what I really find interesting is to see all the overlaps. And the nice thing is, the fascinating thing is that we have so much in common. If we're capitalistic or anti-capitalistic or religious or non-religious or whatever, we all share some basic same values. And those are the values that we need to build on. And one of the most central values is if you wish somebody a happy new year, one of the first things you're wishing is happy new year, happy birthday. So happiness is something very common. Everybody wants to be happy. And the second thing is if you raise your glass, you wish each other a good health. That's how is your health? Those are the two things that are universal. Nobody will disagree and say, no, screw health. I don't want my children to be healthy. I don't want my children to be happy. No. Everybody wants their children to be happy and healthy. So, and if you want to check these two boxes, then there are certain prerequisites, certain things that you just can't go around. And it's like you say, more and more studies have shown how important the gut microbiome is. And that's one of the things that I really outline in my book SOS Save Our Soils very, very profoundly in a very easy language, because it's, if you get scientific, it can become really complicated. So I wrote it as if a 10-year-old could read it without any of the scientific lingo. And that is that our happiness hormone, serotonin, 90% of it is generated in our guts. And if our gut is not healthy, then we become unhappy, because you have something like the brain-gut connection. It's connected towards each other. So my mental well-being doesn't start in my head, it starts in my gut. So if I eat fast food or if I buy rubbish in the supermarket, then my gut is going to be rubbish and my mind is going to be rubbish as well. And so that's the first thing. And the second thing is, if you get pesticides in your body, it isn't always bad for your human cells. That's what Monsanto and Bayer told me. They say, yeah, but don't worry. It doesn't kill human cells. Mm. But when I did more research, then I found out that you and me, we're actually no humans. We are not human. We have no more non-human cells in our body than we have human cells. And the first time I heard that, I was like, what the heck? How is that possible? But it's true. The science checks out that we have more non-human cells. We have bacteria, we have fungi. And these little creatures are the ones that actually are keeping us happy and healthy at the same time. For the last thousands or ten thousands of years, we've been putting all kind of stuff in our mouth, little eggs we found, leaves, berries, whatever. And they were full of microorganisms. And they said, hey, guy, can I stay in your gut in exchange that I absorb more iron for you or absorb more B12 for you? And it was a good bargain. Then we said, yeah, of course you can stay in my gut, because you're going to help me get more food out of my, or more nutrition out of my food. But also they help for protection. For example, our gut system is actually full of little holes, full of perforations. And our good, healthy gut is actually full of these bacteria, making this lining to make sure that these little holes are covered. What happens if your gut flora, your gut microbiome starts to empty out because we use too much hand shell or we use too much pesticides on our food, they die and they go away, then this lining will start to have little leaks. And then you get the leaky gut. A lot of our chronic disease, they start in our gut. Although we have a really our acute disease, so for example headaches and stuff like that, it has really gone down in the civilized countries. But in America and Europe, these chronic diseases are really on the rise. It's crazy. We've never had so much food. We've never had such a good infrastructure. But our chronic diseases are rising. And one of the biggest values in the United States is freedom, right? Freedom is so important, and that's what I love about America. But if your health is going bad, if your chronic diseases are going up, that's not freedom. It's not freedom if you have to lay in bed all day or sit on the toilet all day. And for that, you need healthy food. And that's something we see with all our clients. They want to go out, pick some fresh berries that have not been sprayed, that have not been shipped from the other side of the world. They want to just pick it fresh with all the nutrients inside, put it in your granola in the morning or in your smoothie or in your whatever. And that's the true medicine. There's this ancient saying that says, or your food will be your medicine, or your medicine will be your food. And that's
eat, I think, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know it. Yeah. And that's it. Once we make that mental shift, then people will stop taking Adderalls or taking other kind of chemicals. We don't need that in a healthy environment. But first, we need to create a healthy environment, of course.
Did you know, I just read, it's probably been a couple months ago now, but, you know, ivermectin is a pharmaceutical anti-parasitic drug, and it was developed by a Japanese scientist. And what he did, it was from a soil biome. He had found this microbiome in the soil, and he mimicked it. So it's a synthetic recreation of soil biology. And so what's fascinating, obviously, if you have that biology, if you have that microbiome in your soil and you're eating foods grown in that soil, or you're eating cows that have grazed on that soil, or chickens or whatever, you're going to have that same microbiome that'll be anti-parasitic, and it will protect you from whatever, wherever any of that stuff came from. You know,
exactly.
It's so fascinating how, you know, the solutions are right in front of us, and it is imperative that we prioritize, right? It is imperative that we take action and do what we can do, rather than being paralyzed with fear or worry. Or many people, yeah, we got to fix everything, but I can't fix anything, so I'll do nothing, you know, and they just True. Stay frozen. And, just start today, make better decisions, consider what you're putting in your mouth, read the ingredients, eat whole foods, you know, and you can start today, and you can make all these tiny micro decisions that will create a butterfly or a ripple effect in your life. And then, you know, as you do that and you teach your children to do that, and then you develop a community that does that, you know, this, it'll grow and grow, and we'll have solutions, and we won't need, politicians. We won't need intervention. What gets so frustrating, it's kind of like a psychological operation, is these politicians and these factions, and they'll come through with their platitudes, and whether it's DOGE and we're going to cut spending, or whether it's make America healthy again, and they'll promise all this stuff, and then they'll catastrophically underdeliver. And that's designed to demotivate us. That is designed to deflate us. You know, it gives you like some hopium. It gives you this hit of hopium where you're like, wow, somebody's finally going to do something. I don't have to do anything. I went behind a curtain and I pushed a button. So I did my civic duty. I don't have to do anything. But, you know, these people out there, they're going to do something. And then they make all these promises, and then they conveniently like underperform or do the exact opposite of what they said they're going to do.
Happens,
and then that
lot.
Just deflates the population again. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and they live in this depressed, conflicted state where they feel that they're completely defeated. Everything's impossible. And, you know, what am I supposed to do? And action cures fear. What you're supposed to do is you're supposed to do what you can do. And if you do what you can do and you do it every day, you won't live in fear. That's why this is called the Fearless Podcast. We just want
we want
to demonstrate truth, right? And if you demonstrate truth, it encourages people, and they're like, oh wow, well, they're doing it. Look, they're doing it. These, you know, that guy, TD, he is not smart. Like, he's not a smart guy, and he can do it. So, I mean, if that moron can figure it out, like, I can do it.
Yeah, but that's so true. And that's so nice that you say we need to be fearless. And it's so true. There is not a lot to be afraid about. And the more you actually face your fears, the better it goes. I've recently heard of Finland. Finland, during the Second World War, they were really left to their own devices. Nobody was helping them. So they were really in a horrible state. So they decided after the war, all right, let's make sure it never happens again. We're just going to prepare for the Third World War. And they started to building massive bunkers underground with indoor karting, indoor tennis courts, and indoor swimming pools, and indoor churches, and indoor houses. And it's like a beautiful world underground. And they're like 100% prepared for disaster. And you might think, oh my, they're so alarmistic, or it could seem that they're so alarmistic or preppers or whatever. But they're actually one of the happiest countries in the world, because once you are fearless and face the fear, look fear in the eye and say, okay, what's the worst that can happen? Prepare for it. Then you can actually live a super happy life. And then you say, okay, worst case happen, we have our underground swimming pool and our underground karting. Woohoo! Super nice. And so that fearlessness, it's super important that you keep on pushing that. And together with this fearlessness, you automatically also create room to have fun, because every revolution needs to be fun as well. And we might not get there at the end. Maybe we might, maybe we won't. Doesn't even matter, because there are two things that you want to say on your deathbed. And the first thing is, I tried everything I could. I really tried. I might have succeeded in some things. I might have failed at some things, but I tried. The second thing is, I had a ton of fun while doing it. And that's so important. And the things, everybody can start super small. Even if you go and shop at Walmart, for example, you know, you can buy organic peanut butter instead of the non-organic one. You can start, if you buy your bag of chips, you can look for this chips with sea salt instead of this salt that's otherwise in it. You can make, if you buy bread, buy the whole wheat bread, like you said, instead of the white bread, which is total garbage for your entire body. And so these are like very small things you can do, and they barely cost more. It will save you money in health costs, definitely. And on the other hand, it can also be fun. It can also be fun to teach your children how to grow your own radishes. Super easy. Everybody can grow radishes or can grow tomatoes. It's a plant that can withstand droughts. It's so nice to go in the kitchen together with kids and bake your own bread. You don't have to do it every day, but I've been to the United States. It's difficult to find good bread in the USA. It's super difficult in big mega stores or supermarkets. You will find this, I call it sponge breads, not real breads. But if you, bread is super easy to make, even with natural yeast. You can have these little pots, for example. You put a little bit of flour in it, a little bit of water. Next day, a little bit of flour, a little bit of water. Next day, a little bit of flour, a little bit of water. And after 5 days, we have this exploding pot full of wheat that's alive, because the natural yeast will have come inside. You just put it in the oven and you have a natural bread with natural sourdough yeast. And what is your ingredient? Two ingredients, wheat and water. And you have the best bread you've ever tasted. Maybe add some salt too, always extra tasty. And these are really easy things you can do. You can make your own lemonade. You just take some sparkling water, and you take some flowers from the garden, for example, elderberry flowers. You just take them, put them in soda, put them in sparkling water. You have lemonade. It's so easy. Take some mint from your garden, put it in sparkling water. You have your own lemonade, and you don't have to buy very expensive soft drinks that are super bad for your health. It's as tasty or even tastier. And yeah, it's fun. And that's so nice. How many kids can you point out that go to the city, to normal school, and ask, how many of you know how to make lemonade? Nobody will raise their hands. But imagine how powerful it also feels for a kid to say, hey, Dad, I've just learned how to make lemonade. Isn't that cool? Yeah, it's cool. Everybody should be able to make their own lemonade.
Yeah, and these poor kids today, you know, they've been abducted by these individual electronic devices and these blue screens and this artificial lighting and these apps on these phones that have been created to be addictive, you know, and give you dopamine hits. I mean, I would say that the only solution to that would be agricultural, agrarian, like these kids, we have to get them away from these devices, from the artificial lights, and get them in real sunlight, out in the dirt, making lemonade, doing these different things. It's the only way that they're mental, that mentally they're going to be able to properly mature and grow into responsible adults and continue the process of the fun process. I mean, when you're raising children, absolutely, it has to be fun. Yes, you teach them the rules, and there are guidelines, and there are restrictions because they're kids and they don't have all the necessary wisdom that they need to be adults. But you can, if you do that as like some kind of totalitarian, they're going to grow up miserable. But yeah, you have to bake in the fun. You have to make it fun.
Yeah.
And it is, it's so neat. And in my opinion, like in my opinion, and from our experience, you can't, I grew up more poor, you know, and we've done very well and we've been very blessed. And my,
good for you.
With talking with my wife, our challenge has always been like, how do you make it so that your kids grow up hard? We have this abundance. We do all these things. How do you make it hard? And I, from my experience, how we make it hard is by having a farm and being agrarian, and you give them these responsibilities, right? Your responsibility is to feed the chickens and to collect the eggs, right? And if the chickens get out, it's your responsibility to put them back in. And, you know, and that is very fun. It's frustrating sometimes.
You learn a lot from it.
we sell our eggs so they can collect the eggs. They can sell the eggs. They can make a little bit of money. They Fantastic. Have a responsibility there. And it provides you with an infrastructure as a parent to give them responsibilities. They can participate in it. It helps them to mature. And then all along that process, it's like a small microcosm of life. And they, you know, sometimes animals die, you know, and then you can have that conversation. And, you know, and sometimes it's from maybe you neglected to do something, or maybe you didn't close the door and a critter got in there, you know. And so it's these teachable moments that it gives you these illustrations so that your kids can grow up incredibly mature, very well-rounded, very experienced, you know, and you don't have to go in a concrete jungle under the skyscrapers and experience all that to like know what life's all about. You can literally experience every facet of life right kind of in your own backyard and in your own neighborhood. And it provides you with the tools to be a very effective parent.
Yeah, totally. And that's the dream, right? To be able to raise your kids on a farm. It's so enriching. But unfortunately, a lot of people, it's beyond their scope. They don't have the money, resources, knowledge, and live in cities. And I for example, have this incredible experience I had. So in Belgium, officially we are a monarchy, so we have a king. He doesn't have real power, but he's more like a symbolic king, but he's still a king, and he has a royal palace and everything. And and during COVID he decided to open up his royal grounds, his palace, for children who live in Brussels, the capital of Belgium. And so very nice initiative. I'm one of the guides who volunteer to teach the children about biodiversity. So it's super nice for these kids to be in the garden of the king. You know, it's like almost a fairy tale. It's super nice. But the thing is, for example, Brussels, we have a lot of underprivileged neighborhoods where people really live in poverty. And poverty is money poverty, but also experience poverty. Those are two things that are often connected with each other. And it really shocked me that people who came from these underprivileged neighborhoods, they came to the royal palace to be informed by and inspired by plants and animals. A lot of them didn't even know what a stinging nettle was. Mm. And I was so shocked. But it was also so powerful because at the end of the morning we had together, they knew so much. And we touched the nettle and I asked, who of you dares to like sting yourself? And this children all tried it out. It stings, but it's not the end of the world, right? I taught them how to like roll the leaves of the stinging nettle so you can eat them raw, which is super healthy and also pretty tasty. It tastes like beans. And if you do it well, you don't get stung in your mouth. And that rose the question for with the kids, but also with the teachers. Yeah, but how can people in cities who will never have the privilege to be able to go and live on the countryside, how can they have the same education like the beautiful examples you were just giving? Because that's a dream. And the nice thing is that even if you live in a city, you can recreate a lot of this. So if people are listening to this podcast who live in the city and don't have these possibilities, you can do a lot of things. For example, you can make them responsible for the breads. If you don't make your bread, you won't have a picnic. And that's easy. Flour is not expensive. Water is not expensive. An oven is also not expensive to operate. So you have pretty cheap breads. It's probably even cheaper than the ones you buy in the supermarket. And it's organic if you buy organic flour. The same with kombucha. It's also a very crazy drink you can make for yourself by having this mix between of yeasts. Hey, the SCOBY, a kind of little yeast thing you put in black tea with some sugar and some water, and you'll create a sparkling drink. Be aware because there's a little bit of alcohol in it. So with kids, you have to make sure there's not alcohol in it, of course. Or kefir, it's another kind of drink you can make yourself. There are a lot of experiments you can do. That's one, it costs almost zero money to do it. And it gives the same experiences, the same with growing stuff. Literally, even if you only have a windowsill, you can grow your own herbs and you can recreate the same kind of experiences. So the country life is something that ideally you live on the country, right? But you can have the same country life mentality even if you live in New York City in the Bronx or in Brooklyn or wherever. And that's also very hope giving, I think, and that's a role that teachers have, responsibility for teachers, that principals have, but also community centers to create these kind of workshops, that a kid can just go home and say, hey, mom, can I buy a kilogram of flour? It only costs 50 cents. It's better than asking for a donut that's nowadays costs one or two or even $3, depending on where you go, you know?
Yeah, that's a great point. A friend of ours, they were master gardeners, and their church was downtown, very densely populated, but their church had a church garden, and they just tended that garden, and it was incredible how much food they gave to the food bank every year, you know what I mean? And here they are, like, in this densely populated area, you know, even in these cities, we can, if people are inclined and people are aware, they can say, hey, let's take this park, right? Let's take this park. And yeah, you can still jog and bike and do all this stuff, but let's, even if you're doing it, like what we call guerrilla gardening or a guerrilla food forest. And you are surreptitiously planting fruit trees and fruit bearing things there. I mean, there's lots of ways to implement these strategies. You don't always have to ask for permission. You know,
ask for forgiveness.
That's right. That's right. It's easier to ask for forgiveness than ask for permission. And sometimes that's a great way to implement and create action. This has been a really great conversation with, I'm real big on solutions and we've talked about a lot of things and a lot of solutions. Louis, where can people find more information about you, and where can they find your book?
Yeah, well, the easiest way to follow me is on social media via LinkedIn. Just put my name in Google or in LinkedIn or to my website, louisdj.com. And if you want to buy the book, you can just go to Amazon, SOS, Save Our Soils, and you'll immediately find it. It's it will be released by 24th of June. So if you're listening to it after the 24th of June, then you'll just be able to find it on Amazon. And it's like I say, people say that the people that test read it for me, they say that they've read it in one day because it reads so fast. I don't use a difficult language. It's very action orientated. It's not an intellectual book. It's a book on, you know, when I was 18 years old, I wanted to win every discussion. I had a big ego, probably a little bit bigger, a little less big today than back then, hopefully. And I wanted to win every discussion, and I couldn't win every discussion. And I really was frustrated with that, but I didn't have the right arguments. So the book is actually also really a handbook to really know what you're talking about. If you want to stand on the streets, stand on the barricades, if you want to convince your spouse or convince your employer, if you have one, to serve organic food instead of crappy food, if you want to make any change in the world, how small or how big it is, you need to be informed. And that was really my goal, to give a manual to people that's not about doom and gloom, but that's about very easy solutions and very simple concepts that actually nobody can really discuss about, because it's all about health. And if they discuss, yeah, but we need to feed the world, or we need economic this, or we need to that, I always just say, well, oh, so what you are saying, is that more important than your children becoming sick or ill? Is that more important? No. Well then, go and freaking do it.
That's right. Man, this has been great. Louis, thank you so much for your time. I will put a link in the description down below. And this podcast is Value for Value. If you enjoy the information that we bring, please go on over to thetexasboys.com and you can support us over there. We love and appreciate y'all. And we will see y'all on the next scheduled program.
Fantastic.
Thanks, Louis.
Bye. Have a good one.